Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Hello, and welcome to the Women of Color Network, Inc. Monthly Radio Blog Hour, where we bring you a range of topics addressing domestic violence in the African-American community. As a national network, we use our collective voices to advocate for and educate about women who experience violence and hold abusers accountable. We use our Blog Talk Radio show as a means to engage our guests and communities on important issues that we all should be talking about and taking action on wherever we are. Hi, I am Sister Alice Lynch, and I am one of your hosts for the evening for IDVAC and WOCN Blog Talk Radio Show. I am a national trainer on a variety of topics, as well as an advocate for women, children, and families who experience domestic and sexual violence. I am also an independent consultant and organizer on social justice and human rights issues, as well as a proponent for restorative justice programming. And additionally, I am the chairperson for the board of directors of the Women of Color Network. My co-host for the evening is the lovely Tanya Lovelace Davis. Tanya, let the audience hear your voice.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Miss Alice. I'm glad to be here with you this evening and excited to be on this show with such wonderful guests and really looking forward to a wonderful topic. I am the CEO for the Women of Color Network, Inc., an independent women of color-led nonprofit that is working to end violence against all women by connecting the dots across domestic sexual violence and all forms of violence that impact our communities, and really looking forward to just having a really good talk and a really good time this evening as we connect the dots, as stated, across trauma and domestic and sexual violence and the ways that that impacts our communities and the healing that we need to do from there.
Thank you, Tanya. And Tanya's playing double duty tonight because right now she's going to set the framework for our discussion this evening. So go ahead, Tanya.
Absolutely. So, again, I will be framing the show tonight and just making some points that will lay a foundation for our conversation. People of African descent, particularly those within the Americas and across the Caribbean, have sustained trauma and psychological and emotional injury as a result of slavery, perpetuated by social and institutional inequality, racism, and oppression. The trauma over several centuries was so severe that current generations still carry the scars mentally and socially and physically. Many say that there are transgenerational or collective memory, even cellular memory, that this trauma is embedded within our bodies from these experiences. Historical trauma or intergenerational trauma presents struggles with racism and discrimination, which affects the emotional and mental health and spiritual health and even physical health of our communities. And people of African descent often experience microaggressions and other forms of interpersonal oppression that continues patterns of inequality, giving rise to power and privilege in those who experience power and privilege within our society as it's constructed. Privilege is often given to those who are white, who are male, who are middle class, who are well off, who are heterosexual, who identify as being cisgender, who are Protestant, able-bodied, and so forth. That means that many groups are marginalized and find themselves on the periphery based on this. And yet, there is much strength to be held within those communities that are marginalized. And while there is strength that they stand upon, there are histories of violence that continue to resonate for these communities. And because of that, what we seek to do is to draw linkages during this call around ways in which the historical trauma that we've experienced through violence and through other forms of oppressions that have impacted our communities, how that overlays on top of the domestic and sexual violence that's happening within our communities as well, and to find ways to talk about how survivors and their communities can really seek to and embrace healing methods and strategies that help release and relieve this trauma that we carry, and to create a space for wellness and for healing so that our communities can be restored and can stand on firm ground. And from there, I am going to pass it on to Ms. Alice to start the show.
Great. Thank you, Tanya. Again, we're trying to just pull some information together just to help us with the discussion and framing what it is we're going to be talking about tonight. We do happen to have two women on the show tonight who have done a lot of work in the area of self-healing, in the area of being trauma-informed, and in the area of trying to help women to make better choices for themselves as they have some of these experiences. So I'm really pleased to introduce tonight Lakeisha J. Harris, who's representing one-third of the trio from Black Witch Chronicles. Lakeisha is a health educator at Chicago's Women's Health Center, a Reiki master teacher, root worker, Davinia, the operator of Sojourner's Room, a healing space for the oppressed. She also considers herself an urban farmer who consistently heals through power of apartment farming and making use of small land spaces for food growth. Lakeisha received her bachelor's degree in women and gender studies from Northeastern Illinois University. In 2011, she was selected as a student laureate of NEIU and received numerous awards for her work as a community activist, poet, and one of the founders of SEAS Literary Arts Journal of NEIU. She is a playwright whose political literary work, Spirit House, a collaborative play with Dr. Gerald Robinson, was commissioned by the Greater New Orleans Fair Housing Action Center for Healing, for the healing of the community. As a practicing healer, her work has spanned two decades as a patient care tech, dweller, apprentice midwife, and health educator. Welcome to the show, Lakeisha.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction, Miss Alice.
Tanya?
Wonderful. Yes, and now I'm going to introduce Dr. G. Love. Gerald Dr. G. Love Robinson is an internationally appreciated diviner, elemental, shamanic, practitioner, Reiki master, doctor of naturopathy, poet, playwright, teacher of Reiki and shamanic, indigenous Technologies and a co-creator of Black Rich Chronicles with Lakeisha Harris and Zoe Flowers. She has an online and in-person private practice at www.5directionswellness.com, and through this practice has been participating in the wellness, awakening, and conscious evolution of her community since 2003. Dr. G. Love was one of the first wave New Orleans residents to return after the levee break of Hurricane Katrina, and has provided integrative, holistic trauma healing as well as shamanic and Reiki apprenticeships for thousands of people, encompassing a broad spectrum of ages, genders, beliefs, and national identities in the greater New Orleans area and beyond in the 10 years since. Dr. G's work is about balance, truth, reconciliation, evolution, and remembering who we are. Her work is for the daring, far-reaching dreamers, and visionaries of the world. Dr. G's guidance provides the energetic space of safety we all need to embody and execute the clarity of vision necessary for new paradigm choices during the turbulent final stages of an old paradigm era. Thank you, Dr. G, for joining us on the show tonight.
Thank you. It is a pleasure and an honor to be here in this expansive capacity discussing such important work as the collective. Thank you.
Wonderful. So, Dr. G, I'm going to start with you and ask a question. Based on the wonderful work that you're doing and have been doing, can you share just a little bit about how you would link the work that you're doing to issues of domestic and sexual violence?
Whew. Well, truthfully, the rape culture and the oppression culture, which you very succinctly introduced at the beginning of the show, is pervasive. And there are very few people, if any, in our culture who are not in some way affected by it. And my approach is universal. We're all suffering from legacy of trauma. Even those who are so-called privileged are suffering from that legacy of trauma and are therefore assisting in perpetuating the cycle of trauma. And so with that choice of approach, I use a shamanic understanding, which is really universal in that we are all in this together as one. And coming forward to the community with that sort of open spirit has created an environment where silence is not necessary, because shame has created this silence in our community and in our society around issues of rape and sexual assault of all sorts and domestic violence, external violence. We go straight to silence and shame. And so if a person is experiencing any post-trauma effects, or in shamanic terms we call it magical fright, any post-trauma or magical fright events, and that they are triggered back to the initial trauma and are suddenly feeling shaky or are feeling dangerous themselves, like they may be an endangerment to themselves or other, or are incapable of communicating clearly with their children or their family members, they usually go to shame first and self-blame, which feeds the cycle of trauma. So that's where I start, is in the place of openness, conversation, and relieving silence.
Wow, thank you. Thank you. And Lakeisha, would you like to share some, would you like to add to what Dr. G has shared here?
Well, if you're asking me how my work kind of kind of helps to heal or navigate the space of trauma after domestic violence or rape or whatever trauma women have experienced. For me, I'm doing that work daily at Chicago Women's Health Center. So as a health educator and as a community health worker, I'm helping women navigate basic gynecological procedures like a pap smear, for instance, or a breast exam, where many women after domestic violence or trauma or rape have a hard time navigating that space of just going into the center and getting a pap smear or a breast exam. These are outside providers coming in to a space of healing, and you have to know as a healer how to approach people after trauma to, for instance, show them the speculum that you'd be inserting into their vagina, okay, or showing them how you will touch their body or approach their body after to do a breast exam. So simple things that maybe the medical society forgets, that women have a right to navigate that space of healing. Like, they're not just to be practiced upon, but actively engaged in their healing, like they're a co-participant in that healing, and to form them is their right. So just kind of navigating that space with them and reintroducing them to a gynecological space of healing. So that's only one way in which my work informs that healing space and that healing practice of trauma. Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Lakeisha, I have a quick question for you. One of the things you talk about, which is in your bio, is this urban farmer, that you're an urban farmer.
Yeah,
and,
I am.
I know you use that as a part of your practice, therapy practice. So
yeah,
a little bit about what you call horticulture therapy and how that depression.
Yeah, so I'm so glad you brought that up, Miss Alice. That's a great question. So we know that plants do this amazing thing, which is shift our environment, put oxygen back into the environment, put nutrients through food back in our bodies. So reclaiming that earth space as a tool of healing is one form in which I use in Sojourner's Healing Room. And I came by it via the way of my auntie, who did these amazing tomato plants. I mean, just beautiful landscaping. And when she died last year, I just felt it in my heart to really cultivate a practice around healing and the earth to honor her. And then from that, once I started to farm, I instantly understood how she navigated being a victim of domestic violence for a long time. I mean, my uncle abused her for many, many years, and she used horticultural therapy, which I'm sure it wasn't that term then, or maybe she didn't know that that's what it was. But intrinsically, I knew that that was her place of solace, to just decompress, even shed tears. Like I was going through some experiences, rough experiences last year, and I started to farm, and I would cry and garden. And after doing that and just allowing myself the space to heal in that garden, I knew it was tea. So then I started to use it in my practice as a Reiki master, showing some of my clients how to garden, or introducing them to seeds and soil, and teaching them how to plant.
Great. So is this something that anyone can do?
Absolutely. So the thing is, people think that farming is only something that people with land can do, right? And many of us are partnering together and grabbing back land. But for those in urban areas, we have this misbelief that we can't grow vegetables or plants or anything in our household when that's not the case. As long as you got pot and soil, you can do that within any space. You can use your window seals as a source of farming. You can use an empty room or a small little space and grow some of your vegetables and use it not just for growing food, because it's indeed a healthy body and healthy sources of food is really good for the healing process, but also the active use of planting and growing that food, that active way of doing it is a source of healing as well.
Okay, so when I go out this summer and plant my flowers, I'm letting everybody know I'm farming.
Yes, you are. You are farming. Just know. You are being a farm herd.
Getting my hands dirty, I feel good. So now I know why.
Yeah, yeah. And it increases that. I'm sorry. It increases endorphins in the body, and we know that those endorphins, any active movement, jogging, running, walking, it ramps up those endorphins, and it's really good on the body.
Okay. Well, thank you. I just learned something. I'm sorry, go ahead, Tanya.
No, I was just going to just join in and say that it's just wonderful to have and to understand that something that is accessible, like putting seeds in the ground and engaging in that horticultural therapy, is something that people can do, just can access for themselves. And I wanted to ask Dr. G, if you could also elaborate on accessible, easy sorts of forms of therapy that people can engage in, or practices that people can engage in that specifically addresses the magical fright that you spoke of. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. The thing about magical fright is, you know, here I syncretize as a doctor and as a shaman. I'm working with indigenous technologies, which means ancient healing practices that got passed on. And I'm also working with modern medicine as a naturopath. You know, we call it alternative, but the medical school, the training for that's not alternative. You learn physiology, you learn basic science, you learn the body. And so I'm using the modern medicine and the ancient information, and I learned them both at the same time. I began my apprenticeship in the shamanic arts the same time that I went to school to become a naturopath. And so I learned about trauma, And the effect of trauma on the right brain and the left brain, and how when people are triggered, the reasoning side of the brain almost is incapable of communicating with the triggered emotional side of the brain. So the effect of that on the nervous system is very intense. And how we would describe that shamanically is magical fright. We would say that a person is triggered. But we also could say that a person lost a part of themselves, like they need a soul retrieval, a little piece of themselves splintered off and like ran away to hide because they remembered being assaulted. Something reminded them of the time that they were assaulted in their home, or the time they were attacked in the street, and that there's this little soul loss. And so we call ourselves back to ourselves, and that is something anyone can do. You can call yourself back to yourself. If you find yourself triggered in a place of trauma, if you find yourself not really being able to connect your right and left brain, truly being the emotions took over, where they say that the dog should wag the tail, you find the tail is wagging you, wagging the dog, call yourself in. Call your actual whole name. Say your name. My full name, I call myself to myself. My full name, I call myself to myself. For me, that's Gerald Ann Robinson. I call myself to myself. I say that 3 times in a row. Sometimes I make it a mantra. And then you take and you write down who you know yourself to be. It's almost like you're writing your bio or your resume for yourself. You write down what you know about yourself. I am a loving mother. I am the mother of so-and-so and so-and-so. I am a teacher. I work at such and such and such. I have experience in blah, blah, blah for 15 years. remind yourself of who you are. It seems silly, but it's not silly, because you have to call yourself back to yourself. And that is an ancient practice practiced by the indigenous people of all of the inhabited continents. It is useful to call your frightened self back to yourself. And I really encourage people to use this practice whenever they feel themselves triggered. And if you continue to use it, you'll be able to call yourself in much quicker, and you'll be able to mitigate that panic response and that overwhelm that comes in that moment of being triggered.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because, you know, I'm very close to my mother. She has raised me to be, to look and to reach out to others, to do what you're talking about, to have people around me who remind me who I am. But what I love what you're saying is that in the midst of being traumatized, you yourself can call your own name. You yourself can use your own mantra and can stabilize yourself in that moment. And not that community and support isn't necessary and helpful, but that you can do it yourself. I think
Absolutely.
That's such a beautiful sentiment. Mm-hmm.
We don't always have someone near us. We don't always have that close loved one available to call ourselves in those moments. Sometimes we get triggered by watching a TV show. Sometimes we'll be riding on the subway or the bus or driving in the car, and something will go across our mind, or we'll see something or hear something on the radio, and it triggers us. We need to be able to mitigate that moment alone, and we need to be able to do it quickly.
Wow.
I've learned self again. This is working for me. I'm writing all this down, y'all. go back to you for just a minute, Lakeisha, because one of the things you did say about was planting food and working the food and that kind of stuff. And one of the things, you know, that we're focusing on this show is the whole issue of what works and what doesn't work within the African-American community. And race is always something that we have to be aware of, no matter what we're doing. And so thinking about food and who we are as a culture, how do we use that to begin talking about the healing that needs to happen to many of us because of some of the trauma that we've all experienced? But looking at race and looking at food and looking at sustainability and then looking at it as being something to help us heal.
I understand what you're saying perfectly. Thinking about food and us as a culture, especially in the African American community, we have whole ceremonies built around food, right? Walk into any African American barbecue in the summertime, or food around Christmas or any holiday season, and you know there's a whole ceremony or a gathering around food. And as we gather, we can now, if you're sowing those seeds inside of the house, right, maybe you can introduce healthier ways of living or healthier food into those gatherings. So, for instance, when I was doing my garden, I was so proud to bring to the table basil, fresh basil, and have my children interact in the garden or smell the different smells and introduce them to the different herbs that I grew with my own hands. So then there becomes this ceremony about me planting my seeds in the spring and watching them grow and my children coming over to look at them. Those are healthy conversations and healthy interactions with our children. So then we begin new customs designed around food. And then also in our community, food sustainability is a huge thing. We don't have great access to fresh and organic foods. And one way we can reclaim that space or healthy foods is to grow them ourselves. So those, I feel like, are all ways we can start again building or not even reinventing, because that source has always been ours, but reclaiming that.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to hold that thought for a minute because I have another comment based on what you just said, because we have to take a break. And so we're just going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. So if you're interested in joining into the conversation, the number you can call is 347-327-9611, 347-327-9611. We're going to take a break for a minute, and we'll be right back.
To Sister Tanya Lovelace and the staff and advisors of the Women of Color Network, on behalf of Tony Porter, Bishop Freeze, and a call to men, all the men here want to say thank you. We want to recognize and thank you for the hard work and efforts to address and challenge the rights of women of color in the movement today. We just want to let y'all know we ain't got nothing but love for you. Nothing but love.
Something I want to say about food. Can I add on to that question? Can I
dovetail? Go right ahead.
Thank you. You know, something about us as African Americans, especially since we talked about legacy and what we inherit, we are the farmers of the United States of America. We are the people who cleared this land, worked this fertile soil, learned the winds, learned the sun. Our ancestors are so deep in this soil. The blood, sweat, and tears, and thought, and genius. It takes genius to farm, okay? To do large-scale farming. And it was not the plantation owners or the overseers who were doing that. They were just doing exactly that, owning and overseeing. It was our ancestors who did all of this genius work in the fields. And what's so interesting, of course, is that most of us have, we don't want to have anything to do with that. Because, you know, my father is part of the Great Migration that came up in the 1940s and 50s out of the South and this run to the North. So, you know, we wanted to move to the urban areas. We wanted to get away from what we felt was the shackle and the chain, because it was. But a lot of us have confused land, farming, getting our hands dirty, growing food, knowing about the winds and the rains. Mm-hmm. We've confused that with oppression. And that is our richness, and it's flowing through our veins. And I just want to remind us all that we are farmers, and we are keepers of the earth.
Well, great. Thank you, sweetheart. I'm glad you threw that in there, because I was thinking it, but you said it, so that's even better.
All right.
Right, and that is just such a beautiful way, segue really into, and I'm glad that you did retrieve it, because my phone was on mute a second ago. But it's great, Dr. G, and want to know then from there, you know, how can being in a space of deep intimacy and honesty with self open doors for survivors to receive support from family and from friends and from community, and drawing from that rich history that you spoke from the rich traditions that we have, from the skills and from the and just from the love of self and our extended self, how can that be weaved into our concepts of self-love and healing?
Whew. All right, that is a serious question, and it's central. Melissa Harris-Perry talks about, in one of her books, she talks about collective pride that we have as Black women when other Black women are successful. You know, we all sized as can be for Michelle Obama, you know, and everybody want to look at how beautiful the daughters are as they grow up. And we feel proud, despite the fact that we may not have ever met these people and we don't know them. We're proud, and it affects us, and it actually lifts our spirit. It makes us feel better. Now, the flip side of that, because there's a flip side of everything, is we have collective shame. So when we see someone or ourselves reacting to trauma in a way that's not appropriate, we usually go into a state of collective shame. We're ashamed of ourselves, and we go into denial, dissociation. We want to blame someone else. We panic. If we see our sister, it happening to her, we want to distance ourselves from her. We are afraid to go forward and see if we can help her. So that kind of intimacy that you mentioned, I want to encourage the intimacy, like when I talked earlier about journaling, the intimacy of knowing what we are ashamed of or what we're afraid of, as well as what we're great at. We need to not be afraid of who we fully are. We need to not be afraid that we are, in fact, wounded, that we are, in fact, triggerable, that we are, in fact, easily thrown into locations that feel very uncomfortable. And if we're willing to see it and know it and speak it to those we can trust, then that's when we can raise ourselves and each other up with more ease.
Wow, that was very beautifully put. Do you have something to share, Lakeisha?
Ashe.
Yeah, I want to add to that. Ashe. Also, Ashe, calling each other, calling our sisters in to healing spaces. Like, we don't have to have authorization to create healing spaces for our sisters, for our brothers. I live by the code that adding an extra cup of water to the pot of soup makes a healing session, right? So you fix a bowl for your sister, invite that sister over the coffee, and the simple words of, "Sister, I understand," makes a whole world of difference. It opens up so much. And when we talk about, like, food culture, right, healing sessions have been historically around the kitchen table with Black women. Either we are going to a healing session when we're getting our hair done around the kitchen table, or food, talking with one another around food and the kitchen table. So you don't need authorization to create healing spaces from anybody. You can create those healing spaces for your sisters and for yourself.
You know, I want to do this. Thank you so much, because both of you, I had to get another sheet of paper. Okay, one of the things I want to do is to give you both a chance to talk a little bit about Black Witch Chronicles that you're both a part of, because I think you need to give us a little bit more information about it, and so that people can look you up or be aware that it even exists and what it's doing. So, Lakeisha, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about Black Witch Chronicles, and then Dr. G, you can jump in and cover anything she might have missed. Because you both are doing two different things there, right?
So with Black Witch Chronicles, we both, I feel like, doing the same thing, which is vibrating at a frequency that is magic and healing. So we're using the airwaves, the videos, to decolonize the idea of what it both means to be a Black woman and a Black witch, or to own your magic in this world. The magic that we get, one, healing from the universe. There's been old healers using mechanisms like laying on of hands or speaking that into existence, what should be, speaking healing into existence, what should be, and also speaking truth. And somewhere along the way, we have lost our voice and our right to access that power, that healing power, that Black woman magic. And we hear a lot, hear that term out and about, and I'm so happy about it. But Black Witch Chronicles, we've been individually, like Zoe and G and I have been doing that work for many, many years, me as a doula and an apprentice midwife, and Dr. G has been resonating frequency for many years as a shaman and doing her thing. But Black Witch Chronicles is the coming together of Black women, sisterhood, to resonate at that higher frequency and get the healing and the word out. So we do a video every full moon, every full moon.
I'm going to stop you there for a minute because I believe we got a caller. Tanya, do we have a caller?
Yes, Ms. Alice, we have an addition to our show. It's not just any caller. We have Zoe Flowers, who is joining us both with the Women of Color Network and also the Black Witch Chronicles, and I'm going to let her say hello.
Yay!
Hey, Zoe!
Okay, that's hilarious. I was just listening. I wasn't. Well, I apologize because I tried to vet you to see if you had something to say, and I had a little technical difficulty, but you know how we do. So
I
thought maybe you wanted to say hello. So here we are. Hi, Zoe.
Hi. Giving a supportive listening ear to what my sister witches are talking about. That's all. Y'all sound great.
Have any questions? Yeah.
So I was asking if she wanted to add anything about Black Witch Chronicles. This is Miss Alice, by the way.
Hi, Miss Alice.
Sweetheart.
No, not really. I think that G and Keisha are covering it, but yeah, y'all can check us out every full moon. But you can also check us out on Medium at Large on the first Wednesday of the month as well, where we do a little 30-minute conversation, and then we usually delve in deeper on our show on the full moon as to the topic that we began on in the beginning of the month.
Okay, Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, and just keep listening on, and I will put you back on mute. But thank you, Zoe, for joining and saying hello.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, honey.
Thanks, Ms. Allen.
I need to check the time, that's all. Okay.
Yes.
We
have about 5 more minutes.
Okay, Dr. G, I'm a little bit more interested in this magical fright. How do you get people to that point where they can recognize what's going on and then use some of the concepts that you've talked about? How do you get people there? I mean, is it where they have to themselves first be introduced to what this whole concept is, or is it something they can read and then figure it out? I had never heard of it until tonight. So I'm just curious, how do you get people to recognize it and be able to use it?
Well, it really resonates with people. I think even as you're experiencing, it's resonating with you, because it's something about the indigenous technologies, and that's a fancy phrase for saying old school teachers. It's old-time medicine is what it is. That's what indigenous technologies is. It's old school. Something about the old ancestor medicine. When you use that language, something inside a person says, magical fright, what's that? Do I have it? Maybe I do. Something inside you wakes up. So I find that I haven't had to prod people, because inside they wake up and they look at me and they say, well, what do you mean by that? And when I say, you know, well, you ever get just feel anxiety, feel real scared all of a sudden? All of a sudden your voice goes quiet and you're at work and it's an opportunity to speak up that might assist you in your own promotion, and you can't. Your voice just goes silent. Those moments when you just feel blocked, or those moments when you are overcome by emotion and you recognize this emotion, it's a pattern. You're like, wow, for 20 years, whenever this emotion comes over, it feels like a giant thunderstorm and I have no control over it. And I've thought about it. I've meditated. I do my yoga. I eat. I went on a fast. Like, I don't have control over it. People know the symptoms. There's so many symptoms. And when you mention them and say, this is a deeply rooted magical fright, it starts to make sense. And then the idea is like, oh, something really scared me. It may have scared me when I was 5 years old. It may have scared me last week. But something really frightened me. And that fright has almost become an entity. And this is a very shamanic way of seeing things. The fright itself has created an entity. An entity that could almost be like a spirit possession. Not how people usually think from watching the movies, but much more realistic, like when the emotions take over and a person acts in ways that are uncharacteristic and they don't feel like they're in control. That's sort of what's meant by magical fright as an entity or as a spirit possession. So when we begin to look at behavior with that old-fashioned indigenous lens, it's a new way, it's a different way of approaching, and it can be very helpful. It's like, oh, this isn't even me, it is outside of me. So how do I get rid of it? How do I exercise it? How do I take this fright, which has become its own entity, and draw a circle around it and say, I'm going to contain you, and I'm going to start treating you like a little spoiled brat, like a bad kid, and you're not going to get to have the run of this house. There's going to be rules around you. You don't control me anymore. You see what I'm saying?
So it's something that you have to instinctively figure out and work towards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, work.
And how, Dr. G, do you know, how would you, what might be a sign, how would you know that the way in which you're responding is related to this historic, this cellular, this magical fright that you're talking about? How would you know that?
Well, so many people are wired different ways.
How could one determine that? Yeah.
Some people, again, just know it. And as soon as you even, like, there are people who may listen to this, and all they needed to do was hear this conversation, and they're like, bam, that's me. Thank you. Just was waiting for somebody to give me a box that fits. Like, you know, you gave me a whole bunch of shapes, and the shape I have doesn't fit the shape that you gave me. Thanks for giving me the right hexagram or whatever kind of shape that I can fit into. So there's that. Then there's people who, like, meditate, and when they meditate in these moments, they kind of always see the same kind of scary thing from their childhood, and they don't understand it, but they're like, boy, that same feeling or that same vision always comes back, or recurrent dreams, or some form of therapy, you know, going to see a healer, sitting, as Keisha talked, in sister circles or in circles with family members, and talking it out. These things begin to reveal themselves.
Okay.
Wonderful.
You know, it's making sense to me because my thing is, it just sounds so real and so right, and it's just wonder how do you know when you're there? But I got my answer. Thank you. Well, I
you're
think
welcome.
We're getting close to the end of the show. We have a couple more minutes, and I want to give the two of you an opportunity to just give us a closing statement, something that you'd like to leave us with, and what you. Which you think is important for people to know who've been listening tonight. And so why don't we start with you, Dr. G?
Okay. Well, first of all, I really want to thank you, Miss Alice, and Tanya, and Lakeisha, and Zoe listening out there for holding this space. We can't do this alone. And it is sister circles and groups of people who are willing to come together and make the commitment to raising up the collective consciousness, to not falling to defeat in the face of what sometimes feels unbearably heavy. I just appreciate you. Hearing your voices, being on this call with you strengthens me. It strengthens me in my own healing work because I'm in this with everyone. I am healing and is troubled and traumatized and carrying as much legacy as any patient I've ever seen. And that's what's most important, is to really raise you all up and say thank you for raising me up and for committing to evolving us as a people. And in addition to that, you know, we continue to do that raising up, as Zoe said, every full moon. And if you can't catch the full moon, we're totally archived on YouTube. So just Google Black Witch Chronicles YouTube, and we have a whole page that'll come up with over a year's worth of videos, and there's a lot of knowledge dropped on those videos. So if people want to go into this, yeah, there's almost 2 years, exactly, 2 years of information. It's like you can give yourself a little master's degree at this point listening to those videos. So I encourage you, if you like what you hear, there's plenty more where this came from.
So all you do is go to YouTube and just put in, what is it that you have to put in when you go to YouTube?
Black Witch Chronicles. That's
Black it. Witch Chronicles, okay. And we'll find you that way. Great. Lakeisha.
Yes.
So
I just really want to leave with lifting up the ancestors who both have endured so much trauma to get us to this place. This place of healing. I want to lift them up, especially my Auntie Joyce that really came through me, through spirit in me, and told me to farm, told me to go and use this sacred land, sacred ground as healing space. Those that have endured domestic violence and are now currently in the process of healing, I really encourage you to seek out horticultural therapy as a means of communicating really without communicating. Communing with the earth and communing with the plant magic is just a wonderful tool of healing.
Great. Thank you. And how about you, Tanya? What do you want to close with tonight?
Well, I just want to close with how wonderful this show was this evening. And dare I say therapeutic based on the conversation and to just say that I have driven many hours while streaming and listening to Black Witch Chronicles. So I have to, like, give it a personal shout and say it is a wonderful show. These sisters touch on many, many topics, and it is certainly worth your time to just take a little bit of time out of your day and listen to one of their shows. You won't regret it.
Okay,
thank
well,
you, Tanya. We appreciate you. You and Mr. Alice
okay.
over there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
On the show tonight, I have to admit, I learned quite a bit. I'm going to pass it on. Now my friends are going to hear that I'm an urban farmer. And for anybody to dispute it. So, but I appreciate what you have done, and I'm hoping that your words of wisdom and support for many of the families that we work with who are experiencing different forms of violence in their lives, that your words and your support and your work will do something to help enhance their needs and their services and their support in trying to work through their abuse. So this is the end of our show, and we appreciate our listening audience for being a part of the show. I appreciate my guests, Sister Lakeisha Harris and Dr. Love Robinson, for being here with us today, and, of course, my dear friend Tanya for playing double duty with us this evening. We will be back in next month with a new show for you. And as we end the show tonight, I just want everybody to just think about somebody special in their lives, living or dead, and just take a few minutes to reflect on how much they mean to you. I love you all, and have a good night.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Color Network Hour. We hope that you enjoyed the show and found the topic and information useful. If you have any questions about the content of tonight's show or want to learn more about the Women of Color Network, please visit our website at womenofcolornetwork.org. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.